We'll continue Be'ezras Hashem. We're in Megillas Rus. We're starting Perek Beis. Okay. So we're starting Rus Perek Beis. Let's catch up what we've been up to until now. Instead, we try to set it up such that each shiur can be taken as a standalone shiur, so you don't have to be up to date with everything we've been discussing. But what are we up to? We discussed the story of Ruth deciding that she wants to join Naomi in coming back to Eretz Yisrael. Spoke about that process last week of Ruth insisting on going ahead with this, the interaction between the two of them. And now we're on to the next stage. As we begin Perek Beis, we're on to the next stage of Ruth beginning her life in Eretz Yisrael with Naomi. So let's just review the setting. She's coming into Eretz Yisrael. She had been a princess. She's coming into Eretz Yisrael, basically signing on for a life of, as an outcast, a lonely life. This is what she signed on for. I mean, she's not really expecting anything else. She's coming back with her a widowed and destitute mother-in-law. And her mindset is, my life is now dedicated to joining the Jewish people and remaining with my mother-in-law at her side, dedicating the rest of my life to her. This is the emes. This is my way of connecting to Hashem. This is what Hashem would want of me. And that's where she is. So now she's coming back into Eretz Yisrael. Two penniless women on their own. So here we begin. So you know, we'll actually start from the last perek of Perek Aleph. And again, if you have no sefer, you should be fine. You don't need a sefer. Vatoshav Naomi v'Rus ha-moyavia kalosa ima. So Naomi and Rus, her daughter-in-law, came back. Hashava mistei moyav. They came back from the fields of moyav. V'heima bo beislechem v'tchilas k'tzir chidin. They arrived back in Beis Lechem, at the time of the barley harvest, and this is setting the stage for the next part of the story. Okay, so what happens now? Well, that Naomi Moida, Naomi had a relative. I guess Moida would really mean more an associate. He was a relative, Moida Lisha, a relative of her husband. It was actually Elimelech's nephew. So he was Naomi's nephew-in-law. Ish gibor chayil. He was a man of valor in Mishpachas Elimelech. Ushmoy Boaz. His name was Boaz. Now, so we're putting this into the background. He's not yet moving in on the scene, really, but the Megillah is putting this into the background. Now, let's just note something. Boaz was, as we're going to see soon, he was a very great man. The Mefarshim already addressed, right, the Naomi and Ruth come back onto the scene, and they're basically on their own, and he's a very influential and wealthy person, as we're going to see soon. Why doesn't he take steps toward helping them? So the Mefarshim discusses, right? They start out in a vacuum until, as we'll see, Ruth, so to speak, quote unquote, chances on his field. But why doesn't he help them immediately? Like as we saw earlier, everybody knew that Naomi had come back. So the Mefarshim say a number of things. The Malbim says that a number of Mefarshim say, including the Malbim, the Shevet Musa, the Eger Shmuel say this. They say that Naomi did not want to cast herself on other people. She wanted to be left to take care of herself. This was her dignity. And as much as he wanted to help her, he was going to respect that. He was going to respect that. He was going to stand back and let her navigate while he'd be kind of like watching from a distance. But others say other things. The Akidas Yitzchak said that he saw what was going on, but he understood that Rus was destined for great things. Apparently, he was already considering the prospect of marrying her. As we saw, he had just lost his wife. But he first wanted to give it a little bit more time to unfold in order to be able to really test her sincerity. Be able to see what is this really about. But whatever the case is, meanwhile, putting it into the background that there is this relative named Boaz. So now, Vatoymer Rus haMoavia el Naomi. So Rus, the Moavia, says to her mother-in-law Naomi, have to figure out, and now they're back in Beis Lechem, where are they getting their next meal from? So she tells her, El Chano HaSodeh V'alakto Bashibolim Achar HaShem Tzochein Ve'ino. She says, you know, we'll get our food from, I'm going to go find kernels. It's the barley harvest. Now we know that in the barley, whenever there's a harvest, there are three mitzvahs in play that provide for the poor, right? There's Leket, Shikha, and Peah. Peah means that at the edge of the field, you leave over a portion of the produce. Shikha means that if when you're gathering together the bundles, you suddenly realize that you left a few behind, you have to leave them there, you can't come back and get them. And leket means that as you are actually doing the harvesting, like you grab a handful of stalks, and then you, whatever you call it, S-C-Y-T-H-E, if anybody knows how to pronounce that. Scythe, is that how you say it? Okay, the cutting knife. Scythe. So as you slice it with the scythe, so some kernels are likely to fall as you're doing. You're not going to have them all in your hand. The ones that drop to the ground, you should just leave. That's called leket. So whatever the case is, the poor always knew that when there's harvesting going on, they can come to the fields and collect what's there for the poor. So here, Ruth is telling her mother-in-law, Naomi, now is the season. I'm going to go out to the fields. I'm going to go find the field where they'll treat me decently. Asher tzochein be'eino. She says, I'm going to find the field where I'll find favor. We'll get back to this momentarily because really she has the right. But let's see. And Naomi tells her, go, my daughter. Yeah, go see if you can get food for both of us. So let's just note a few things. Again, we have to analyze these psukim because this is a story of Ruth. And a lot of her character is being brought out here. And a lot of it is in the nuances of the psukim that the Mefarshim then bring out. So there's a few things that the Mefarshim say here. The pasuk stresses. Ruth the Moavia said to her mother-in-law, let me go collect grain. Why are we stressing the Moavia here? We already discussed last week. Why are we stressing Moavia here? So Ruth is making a sensitive point. She's saying to Naomi, you are a known woman. It's going to be terribly embarrassing for you to be out there collecting grain. People know who you are. Me, I'm a stranger. I'm a Moavia. People don't know who I am. Let me go do the collecting. You stay home. This way we'll save your dignity. So and then she says, I'll go be melakit among the kernels in whoever's field whoever will allow me to do so in his field. So you're also the Mefarshim, there's a number of aspects of Rus's refinedness that's coming out here. The truth is that, as we said, every field owner is obligated to leave these different matnoi sanim, the leket, the shikha v'peya. Yet, Rus says, it's a matter of grace. I don't want to go to the field of the person who's like looking grudgingly at the, oh, I dropped that and now they're going to come take it. I'm only going to go to a field where the owner is happy for the poor to come. He sees it as a merit. That's the person whose field I want to collect from. I don't want to be coming from the one who's going to be looking at it grudgingly. Okay. So she's going out to see where can I collect this grain from. Vatelech vatovoy. She went around. Vatelaket basodel me'achre ha'koitzrim. She found a field where it looked like it would work. And she saw, yes, the harvesters are busy harvesting. So she went kind of following behind them. What's the idea? Which of the three matonis is she collecting in this manner? Which of the three matonis would be relevant to kind of like follow the harvesters as they're going along and to follow them and collect? So what's that? The dropping. Oh, that's right. The leket. So this is something that the Mefarshim also know. Let's remember, there are three that we're dealing with, right? We're dealing with the shikha, what's left over behind afterwards. People, they forgot it there. There's the leket that's kind of dropped along the way. And then there's peya, which the owner leaves at the edge of the field. The most popular to go after was peya. Why? Because it's concentrated, it's predictable, you know where it is. It's all at the edge of the field. So that was the most popular to go after. Leket was haphazard. You didn't know where there would be, you didn't know how much there would be. It was very like, why spend your time like looking around the whole field for the kernels that happen to drop when you know that the pay at the edge of the field, it's all there, it's all available. So the Malbim brings out, the Mepharshim said, this is all part of it. All this is bringing out Lucy's character. She didn't want to be where the grabbing was going on. Yes, she knew that's where the crowds would be. The crowds would be, everybody would be there grabbing where the peya was. And therefore she specifically chose the least popular one of, yes, I'm going to have to sweat. I'm going to have to be, you know, going back and forth, like looking on the ground with a magnifying glass. But that way I won't have to lower my dignity. I won't have to get into these elbowing competitions. And this is why she is specifically choosing this route. Okay. Vayikar mikreha chelkas hasodele by aza shemi mishpachas avimel. And she chanced upon, the pasuk even this is a double terminology. She happened to chance upon the field of Boaz from the family of Elimelech, her mother-in-law's relative. So let's note this. This is what we would all call hashgacha pratis, right? And yet the pasuk uses the term vayiker mikreha. It was a coincidence, a great coincidence. She chanced upon the field of Boaz. So let's focus on this a little bit and bring this out, because this is the style of the psukim. This is the style of Tanakh in a few places. In order to bring out this point, I want to draw on another example where it's even stranger. Remember Eliezer goes looking for a wife for Yitzchak, right? He puts forth a tefillah to Hashem to help him get to the right person. What does he say? So he says as follows. And we all know that he gave that test, right? I'm going to ask to drink, and she'll say, I'm going to feed all of your camels. But his terminology there also was Hashem Elokei Adonai Avraham. He addresses Hashem and he says, Hakrein no lifonai. Please make it happen to be that the girl will come out. And now that's mamash a contradiction in terms, because you can say, please bring out the right girl. But what do you mean, please coincidentally make it be? It's a contradiction in terms. How can you ask someone to plan a coincidence? How can you ask Hashem to plan a mikra? So here's where Rav Hirsch brings this out, and Malbim makes this point here also. He says, you know what? It's really a lesson for us. It's really a lesson for us, a certain switch that we have to make in our mind. For us, the word mikra means coincidence. It means happenstance, right? Something happens to happen. We try to train ourselves to understand that no, the things that happen by chance are actually bahashkoch. He said, in the minds of these great people, the word mikra translated as, said there were two things in life, either the things that I plan for myself or the things that Hashem plans for me. There was no other category. There weren't things that happened. Missing a bus isn't something that happened. Tripping and banging my knee isn't something that happened. These were things that wasn't my plan. I didn't figure out, okay, what's the right way to bang my knee. This is something that Hashem planned for me. So they lived with those very clear, distinct two categories. Is this something that Hashem is sending my way, or is this something that I plan? When I sit down to eat breakfast in the morning, it's something that I plan. When I stub my toe on the way to get the breakfast, oh, this is something that Hashem planned for me. The word mikra simply meant that in their jargon, in their speech. That's what the word mikra meant. Mikra meant something that Hashem arranged for me. And therefore, on the contrary, when Eliezer is talking to Hashem, that's exactly how he expresses it. You arrange this. How does he say that? He uses the word mikra. Hashem, you arrange for the right, I can't arrange for the right girl to come, right? I can arrange for the camels to be in place, but I can't plan for the right girl to come. Hashem, you plan that, and he uses the word mikra. So this is like something for us to come away with in terms of what we call chance, coincidence in our life. No, these are the things that Hashem decided to send my way because of his specific plan for me. So this is mamish what's being expressed here in this pasuk. Vayikar mikreha. She chanced upon the field of Boaz. Chanced upon. This is Hashem directing the history of Klal Yisrael, right? As far as we're concerned right now, directing Rus's story. Hashem led her by the hand specifically to this field where he wants her future to unfold. But it's even more than that. Rus doesn't realize that she views herself as this glorious Jewish nation, and I'm kind of like the outsider coming and timidly trying to see if I can have this chus of becoming a part of them, while she doesn't realize that Hashem is actually leading her by hand, mamish, to center stage of this nation, to the whole future of the nation, now is really in her own life story. So what happens? V'hinei Boaz ba mi-Beis Lechem. Boaz is coming to Beis Lechem. He's coming to see what's going on. His fields are being harvested. It's a big operation. Very significant time of the year in terms of business. So he says to the harvesters, Hashem imochem. Yudke vavke. This is full shame. Hashem be with you. And they responded, may Hashem bless you. So this is parenthetical, but we're going to take note of the parentheses also. The Chazal draw our attention to this form of greeting, where they're actually using Hashem's name to greet other people. And the truth is that we do this also. We use the word shalom, and that shalom is actually a name of Hashem. It's not from the Shemos Sheinam Nimchokim. It's not from the top level Shemos. These are Shemos that you're allowed to say, but you're actually conferring Hashem's name on somebody when you. That's why you're not supposed to say shalom in the bathroom. So let's appreciate the significance of this. So first of all, there are two angles that we want to approach this from. Because I'll say that this was actually a takana that was made in this time, that they should actually greet people with Hashem's name. You should greet people with Hashem's name. By the way, I just want to also put that into parentheses. Appreciate the value of the word shalom versus hello. Yeah, the word shalom actually carries mamish, a divine power. You meet the person, you say shalom, shalom aleichem, whatever it is, you're actually bringing bracha upon the person. Don't underestimate the value of your mouth. As a Jew who's connected on high, you can actually open sources of bracha to the person that you're greeting with those mere words. Shalom, shalom, shalom aleichem, whatever, the word shalom. You want to say hello, shalom, or hi, shalom, something like that. But appreciate that. Appreciate that you carry that power, and appreciate that Hashem has nachas when you do that, and appreciate that it actually brings bracha on you, right? We say, make that an agenda to actually bless the Jewish people around you in your life. And right, those who bless my people, I will bless them. So realize you're bringing bracha to them, and you're bringing bracha to yourself by doing that. That's what Rabbi Victor Miller would say. You walk by a Jewish home in the morning, you say, have a wonderful day. Nobody hears you. Nobody hears you. Hashem hears you. Hashem hears you. It's not a polite greeting. This is a very great activity of bringing bracha upon Jews. And yes, at this time, at this point in history, up until then, they didn't use Hashem's name in this sort of fashion. But at this point in history, they said, no, this carries that value. And we want to be doing this. What's that? Well, like God bless you. What's that? Like God bless you. So presumably any bracha you say carries that value. We may say that there's more power, there's more potency in Lashon Kodesh. But yes, any bracha, if you say good morning to a Jew, you've actually put bracha on them, but why waste it on the morning? Say good day. Say more than that. But you know what? Don't stop saying good morning because of that. Especially since we can imagine if the morning is good, that'll lead into a good afternoon also, and that'll, you know, etc. But yes, any bracha. But we have to make another point here. I have to make another point to you. We bounce around expressions like Baruch Hashem, Mirta Hashem, Be'ezras Hashem. Let's take a step back to appreciate that also, to appreciate what we're actually doing there. This is a point that the Mefarshim make. Again, this is parenthetical, but it's a deliberate tangent. The Mefarshim say something very interesting. Again, Chazal say that at this point in time, it was at this point in history that they made a takana. They instituted that people should use Hashem's name when greeting others. Meaning up until then, they didn't do that. And now, they instituted it. Now, there's a principle that we have to understand that we often see in various stages of history that they made a takana, which seems to be like an improvement. Anshe Knesset HaGdolah were metaken, a formula for davening, right? Here, they were metaken to use Hashem's name when greeting people. Does that mean that, oh, up until now, they were missing this, and now we made an enhancement? So this is a principle. This far as here, but Victor Miller made a big stress about this. We have to realize that takanas often reflect the fact that there was starting to be a certain drop that had to be countered with the takana. Up until then, the takana wasn't necessary. The takana was covered in other ways. But because things were starting to deteriorate in a certain way, they had to counter it with this takana. So the takana was an improvement, but it was an improvement that was necessitated by deterioration. Instead of bringing other examples, we'll use this example here. It's a very profound point, which is relevant to us understanding both sides of the point. Up until then, they didn't use Hashem's name in this sort of way. You know why? Because of their awe. Hashem's name was something that people, like today, us with Yudke Vavke, or even with the Shem Hashem, the Shem Agnus, which Yudke Vavke we never say, right? The Shem Agnus, Adoy, we say that in Tefillah, but we don't say it in conversation. Really, you can. Really, you can. If you're using it in a not Levatola kind of way, right? If you say, I hope Hashem will help me do X, Y, Z, essentially you can say that you can say Hashem's name. You can say, I hope Adoy will help me do that. Why don't we do that? Because we want to maintain a certain reverent distance. We want to maintain a certain reverent distance, right? We understand that if we want to continue relating to it right, we can't grow too familiar with it. And otherwise, we'll reach a situation where we'll start bouncing the name around Stam, and you know, might yell it from the bathroom, whatever it is. And therefore, in order to keep ourselves in the right place, in order to keep the shame in the right place, we dafka show our reverence for Hashem's name by not saying it, by keeping a distance. That's why we say Hashem. Let's appreciate that. Whenever you use the name Hashem, instead of actually saying the shame, you are expressing reverence for the Shem Hashem. I don't want to actually say it, keeping a reverent distance. So in earlier times, they were extremely sensitive to this, and they just avoided the Shem Hashem because of that reverent awe, because of that reverent awe. This is why, right, keep a Sefer Torah in the Aron Kodesh, or Halacha says to taking it out. You can't just decide I want to bring the Sefer Torah to school to show the kids or whatever it is. There are very strict halachas about when and how. It was very common. Corona, it was complicated. We can't just move a Sefer Torah from place to place. There are rules. It has to be settled for a certain amount of time, etc. But then what was happening was because they were so aware of Hashem and so reverent and so in awe that they kept the distance and didn't use his name. It reached a point where they were saying, you know what? What we need to do now is, on the contrary, stop bringing Hashem's name into more use because that constant awareness is not as natural. We're going to have to compromise the awe a little bit in order to make people more aware of it. People were keeping a reverent distance, but that it was reaching a place where the reverence was starting to wear off, and we're only having distance without the reverence. You're only having distance without reverence, we have to start turning it around. Right, we want Hashem to be a regular part of people's lives. And that was the dynamic here. So that changed. Therefore, they said, no, it's a shame. We're losing those heightened sensitivities where people were so aware that they just wanted to maintain a reverent distance. Now, the awareness is fading off. So now, on the contrary, let's start bringing Hashem's name more into people's lives so as to step up the awareness of Hashem. So that's what they started encouraging. No, on the contrary, use Hashem's name. Use Hashem's name in greeting other people. Bring Hashem to a higher level of consciousness. Question.
Okay. So you said like Shalom is one of Hashem's names. So you use that, you're actually, you know, invoking Hashem. But Hashem isn't one of Hashem's names. So if we say Baruch Hashem or Hashem, you're just using a placeholder for Hashem's name. You're not using Hashem's name. Does it have any power at all? It's better than saying, you know, may God bless you, to say Hashem bless you, for example.
Oh, okay. So that's a good question. So first of all, it's true. We're kind of doing both today, meaning we are, you know, the word Shalom actually carries the potency, the charge of Hashem's name, right? Hashem, like you said, it's a reference to Hashem's. It's a reference to Hashem's. So let's appreciate two things, two sides of the coin. First of all, yes, even though you're not actually using Hashem's name, a lot of the power of it is coming from the fact that you are utilizing that very powerful tool, the mouth. The mouth that's connected on high is a very powerful tool to bring bracha. Even if you would not say Hashem's name at all, but you would just say to the person, like we said before, good morning. But it's coming from the mouth of a person who's connected on high. That itself carries great power. Bringing in the name of Hashem adds that much more, right? But yes, there certainly is value. Even if you wouldn't say Hashem, you just say good morning, good day. The power of our neshama, the power of who we are, the power of our high divine connection, the power of the chelek eleka, of the godliness that's in us, gives that an awful lot of weight that we should appreciate in its own right. So yes, even just saying bless you, good morning, have a great day, have a great week, etc., that carries immense power. Now, as far as, I'm going to get to it, just one moment. As far as saying Hashem, so you have to realize that it's true, we're making a certain juggle of values here. On the one hand, yes, we are giving up on the greater potency of actually using a real name of Hashem. But on the other hand, we are displaying that reverence, which also carries a lot of value. We're showing Hashem, we want to be careful. We don't want to get to a situation where your name is just being bounced around. So yes, it's that juggle. It's that balance. Rebbe Tzvi Shvei was going to ask him. What's the significance of a word like Adon Olam?
You know what you're saying. Adon Olam.
Right. So the word Adon, master, is yet a further step removed. Meaning Shalom is actually a name of Hashem. Adon is a further step removed. It in itself, just the word Adon, is not a name of Hashem. That's kind of going to be similar to using the word Hashem, meaning I know who I'm referring to, and that is what carries the value. But it's true, it doesn't actually carry the power of an actual Shem. Yeah. So now this brings us to the value of the terms that we bounce around a lot, and you know, let's take a step back and actually appreciate it and do it with more appreciation. Terms like Baruch Hashem, Emirat Hashem, Be'ezus Hashem, etc. Appreciate what we're saying with these things. It's like my mother once asked one of my little nieces. She was about, I don't know, like 4 or 5 years old, and my mother said something like Gamzu L'Toyva, and she asked my little niece. She said, "You know what Gamzu L'Toyva means?" She said, "Yeah, it means oh well." Something didn't work out well, you say, so we want to get to a place that, you know, Emir Hashem doesn't just mean I hope so, and that Baruch Hashem means decent, okay, right? So let's appreciate what we're doing. We're invoking Hashem into our lives. We're bringing Hashem into our lives by using these expressions. And it's a blessed habit that the Bnei Yisrael have. It's a blessed habit that we have as Jews. We do it by rote. And you know what? That's fine. It reflects who we are. But it can be even better if we can actually take a step back and appreciate it. Baruch Hashem means that whenever I am making reference to something that's okay in my life, how are you? Really say fine, Baruch Hashem. Just say Baruch Hashem, you haven't really answered the question, right? I asked how you are, and you're telling me how Hashem, right? But if you say fine, Baruch Hashem, what are you saying? You're saying I have Hashem to thank for the fact that I am fine, right? So appreciate that. Appreciate that you're on that level. of bringing Hashem into your regular ways of thinking. You say, Yemi Yitzah Hashem, I have a plan. Yemi Yitzah Hashem is not just a way of saying, well, I'm not sure, but I hope so. It's a way of saying, I'm making plans. It depends on Hashem wanting it. Be'ezras Hashem, I'm making a plan and I am relying on Hashem's help to make it happen. These are expressions that have a lot of value. Okay. Close the parentheses. So now, Vayomer Boyaz Lenaroi Hanitzav al HaKotzrim. So now, Boyaz said to his assistant, his youth, who was supervising the harvesters, he said, Lemia Narazois, where did this girl come from? And he noticed Ruth. So before we even move on to the continuation, here we have Chazal who move in here and take note of this. Why did Boyaz ask this question? First of all, it's not the derech of upstanding Jewish men to inquire about girls in the street. But second of all, just also practically, it was the harvest season. There were many poor men and poor women who were there doing the collecting. Like, why did she stand out? Why did she attract his attention? So here this Chazal's famous teaching that he noticed her behavior. Her behavior stood out. Her conduct stood out in a couple of different ways. Both in terms of tznius, which is what's more commonly stressed, the way she, first of all, how she, the very fact that we said before, she was keeping to a place where she would be able to maintain her dignified, refined behavior and not get into, like, you know, the pushing competitions. And also in the way she bent over, Chazal say, she had her distinct way of doing it, of kind of kneeling down instead of doubling over. And also in terms of the precision, she was very attentive to the halachas, meaning with the halachas of leket, there are, it's not that any amount of kernels that drop are leket and are available for the poor. It's two kernels at a time that drop. From, you know, a guy takes a grab, if two kernels drop, that's leket. Once three drop, the owner has the right to come back and take it. So she saw that she was being very unusual. The person comes, he's just collecting, okay, whatever, right? But he saw that she was being very meticulous about making sure that she was taking two kernels at a time. So all these different aspects, she stood out in terms of her meticulousness, in terms of her noble and dignified tzniyistiki conduct. Where did she learn this halacha from? The answer that we have to say is that, again, let's remember, she was spending her life with her mentor, with her Rebbe. Naomi was the one who brought her into the fold. Naomi was the one who gave her who showed her what Yiddishkeit is. And she was clinging to Naomi, as we saw last week, for two reasons. First of all, because she was her mentor. She was her guide. And second of all, because of the chesed she wanted to do with Naomi. We have to surmise that, yes, before Ruth, knowing also the great woman that Naomi was, before Ruth went out to collect, Naomi sat her down and told her, it's not hefker. There are rules. Here are the halachas. Ruth applied herself to those halachas with due seriousness. In fact, some of the mafarshim bring out later, we'll see soon, that part of the greatness of what was going on here is that when she actually came to the fields, which is often the case, many times Bali Tshuva will identify with this, when she actually came to the fields, she was hearing from Naomi about this is how it works and that's how it works. And there are standards you have to adhere to. You know what happened? She came to the fields and she looked around and she said, I don't necessarily see all of those standards. But nevertheless, I don't necessarily see all of those standards. I don't see everybody behaving in that glorified, you know, conduct that Naomi was describing, that's how a Jewish woman or a Jewish person has to behave. And nevertheless, she said, I'm not everybody. This is what I understand to be Rotzen Hashem. It doesn't matter what I see around me. And this is where she stood out. But yes, presumably, we must presume that she went through with Naomi all of the halachas. And she was going about it in a very meticulous kind of way. So it's actually almost paradoxical that usually part of the idea of tznius is to make a person stand out less. But in this kind of situation where there was just that hefkeros and it was a situation of lack of tznius, the one who was maintaining her dignity, so I don't think it was a kind of situation where she was attracting attention in an inappropriate kind of way, but no, a great person passed by, it drew his attention. He took note of the fact that, look at this dignified, noble kind of behavior in this setting. So that's why he inquired about her. So now, the Vayan Hana Nitzav al HaKoytzrim, so the supervisor said, and he said to him, she's a Moavi girl. She came back with Nami from Moav. So, Vatoimer alaktono vasafti ba'amorim. So she said, she came here to collect with everybody else from the different piles after the koytzrim, after the harvesters. And he said, yeah, she's been here basically since the morning doing her thing. This is the Moavi girl. Okay. So Boaz, as we really said, he had already heard of her. He knew about Naomi, right? She was his relative. And he heard that there was this tenacious, determined Moavia who had come back with her. And now he's actually encountering her. And now he's having his own experience of seeing her greatness in action, seeing it in action. So, Vayomer Boaz al Rus. So Boaz came over to us and he said, Halei shamat biti, al telchi livkoit misodeachem. Here, you heard the attitude here, meaning you already saw here how here you're going to be permitted to collect, no one's going to make you problems. So I'm requesting of you, don't go anywhere else. Gamlat lo tavurim mizeh. Stay here. Don't go collecting in other people's fields. Stay here. Stick with my girls. Mefarshim say that there are different teams. There are the team of the harvesters of the harvester boys and the team of the harvester girls. So he's telling her. Some of the Mefarshim say that he's actually kind of bringing out a nuance to her. She was so on top of her own conduct, but still. She was coming from Moav. She wasn't completely attuned yet to all the different nuances. So he told her, "Don't follow the harvester. There are teams of the men. There are teams of women also working. Stay there. You follow them and collect." But the point is, he's saying, "Stay in my field. I want to be the one to be providing you with the support." And the Mefarshim say here, right, we mentioned earlier, that he didn't want to impose his help on Naomi, but now that Rus is already here, he's saying, I am looking to support her. I didn't have a way of doing it up till now without like encroaching on her dignity. But once you're here, I'm asking you, make a point of coming here and you'll be lavishly cared for. Einayich basodeh asher yikzerun v'olach tachreihem. You take in the whole field, go wherever you want. Haloitzivisias haneorim levilteen ogeich. And I'm telling, nobody should bother you. I told all the workers here. But even more than that, v'tzamt v'alachta l'akalim v'shosis ma'ashay shavun an'orim. Says the workers used to bring, some of the workers would bring buckets of water for the workers. The poor who were coming to collect didn't have a right to take from that water, right? But he's telling her, I'm giving you the right. I want you to be taking water from the water that my workers are drawing. I want you to be comfortably set up here. Pick all you want. You're right in the middle of the interaction here, but okay, we'll stop here for this week. Good to go. Into you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Good to go.
Yeah, good to go.